All right, Story God Pod.
Still calling it that?
Well, we're still in Story God. Every time someone says they listen, I'm like, do you have any names?
Story of God Pod Epilogue.
It's just going to be the Grace Church Podcast after this. But this last week, we had a conversation on Sundays. We're going through these different questions in light of the story, questions that a lot of folks have. And we kind of had the conversation around, is Jesus the only way?
I'm doing a podcast with Mr. I Don't Like Thanksgiving. And I just, if you didn't listen to the message, you need to listen to it and send your complaints to afin@graceohio.org.
All right, so this is my point. For some context, it's easy to generalize the things that we don't care about, right? You hear a lot of people say, all rap sounds the same, all country sounds. Well, that's because they don't listen to rap or country, whatever. And so my point was trying to make people mad. You know, there's things that I don't care about, but people are very passionate about, like Thanksgiving Day food.
Like Thanksgiving meals.
I also have board games and musicals. What are things that people love that you just don't care about?
Oh, man. Well, first of all, don't bring pizza to my Thanksgiving dinner. That's what I'd say. Because I do care about that a little bit.
There are pizzas, though, that would be more special than the turkey.
I mean, there's, you know, you probably the music things you mentioned, musicals. there are people who get really passionate about, like, I'm a big sports fan, but there's certain sports I don't. I don't know. I mean,
how much of the World Cup did you watch?
None. I watched some, and some. You know, some parts of the world said that's real football. You know, not your football.
But, loser.
You know, I mean, I did. I paid attention to it, but stuff like that. You know, but there's other things I care a lot about. You know, like, you know, making. I like my lines being straight when I mow.
Dan is a little OCD, if you didn't know.
And I like Thanksgiving dinner, okay?
And the point of the whole thing was, you know, the farther that we get out from something, the easier it is to generalize, the easier it is to say, oh, it's all the same. So that was the conversation we had. We're in a very, the word is pluralistic, which just means there's a lot of beliefs, there's a lot of different takes, and so it's easy to say, they're all the same when you're not super close to it, but I mentioned this on Sunday. There's a study that they do every couple of years called the State of Theology. Mm-hmm. A couple of different organizations come together. They interview evangelicals, which isn't just a voting block. It's people who believe certain things about the Bible, about salvation, about our call in life. In 47%, the statement was that God accepts worship, the same worship from, I think it was Muslims, Jews, and Christians. And 47% of people responded to that question that they agreed with that. So 47% of evangelical Christians in this study said God accepts worship from all these different, which would say Jesus isn't the only way. Mm-hmm. Why do you think that is? Because we can say, oh man, that's wrong belief. We got to teach it. What do you think is beneath why maybe in our kind of cultural moment that big of a percentage would feel that way? And maybe half people listening to this would feel that way.
Yeah. I mean, so I, when you mentioned that on Sunday, but I appreciate you mentioning it. It's a true stat. And I thought you did a great job Sunday communicating this. You asked me this question, and several layers came to my mind that some is opinion, probably some is just you can trail it and say, find fact. I think we live in a culture that elevates inclusion on the same plane as truth. So maybe inclusion has become like an 11th commandment, you know, thou shalt include everybody and nobody shall be wrong, you know, and so it just feels wrong not to be inclusive, you know, like, can't we all get along? Can't we all agree? Can't we all be right? Things like that. So I think inclusion is like a value that has trumped a lot of other values in our culture, maybe even sincerity, you know, like, well, they're sincere, you know. The truth is there are some, I mean, this, you know, give you an email or two, but there are tons of Muslims that are more sincere,
right?
You know, and but you can be sincerely wrong. You know, the idea of inclusion, I think, kind of holds hands with, it feels confrontational. to say that your way is the right way. And I think another reason is, I mean, maybe two or three other reasons come to my mind, Aiden, that I have dealt with personally. You talked about the closeness of it. When somebody close to you, a loved one, a child, a parent, or whatever, rejects the faith and maybe goes a different way, and they're sincere and you love them, and then particularly if they die,
sure,
you're like, I can't believe.
There's real pain attached
yeah,
to it.
Yeah, that's a very personal thing, I think, that happens at that point. I also think, if I'm being honest, that, you know, so that would be a part of it. I think there is a inaccurate, incomplete understanding of the claims of Christ.
Yeah.
You know, and so I'll say that, not knowing really what Christ said. And if I could add to it, there's an incomplete, inaccurate view of what some of those other religions would say.
Right.
They are exclusive as well.
Right.
The Muslim religion would be exclusive. You know, they don't believe Jesus is the Son of God. And so some people that say that would, I think, have an inaccurate view of that. Maybe the last thing I'd say is this. I think the reason some people say that it doesn't make it right is because they've been around arrogant, angry Christians who say Jesus is the only way, in a way that you brought this out very well Sunday, in a way that's very repelling.
Yeah.
And so I think you can speak truth in a way that's kind, loving, and yet convicted.
Yeah.
And so I think some people, it's a oversteer to the wrong tone or tenor of that.
Yeah.
I mean, those are just things that come to my mind, but I think all those things, it could be a mixture of those things, it could be one of those things cause people to say, yeah, certainly everybody's included. Certainly it's all okay. Certainly you just got to be sincere. Certainly my grandma, you know. And I think it becomes easy then to just dismiss the facts for the feeling.
Sure, sure.
You know, it just feels better to say everybody's included.
Yeah.
And that doesn't make it right, but I think that's why.
Yeah, we're in a very... And it has its pros. You know, you always hear people talk about individualism as if everything's bad. It's not all bad. There's good things that each person has to make their own decision, etc. I think sometimes maybe even the way it's painted is just as personal. I accepted Jesus into my heart, so he is the way for me. Mm-hmm. But for that person, you know what I mean? It's so, that's where I think the story of God helps us look at Jesus isn't a pathway to some reality. He's reality himself. He is life himself. He was the creator. He's before all things, after all things. So it only makes sense in the course of the story. But sometimes when it gets boiled down to an individualistic, just me in Jesus, it kind of says, well, I'm good, but why would I ever for anybody else? Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Because we're not seeing the story. We're seeing just in our story, which is an important piece of the puzzle, but isn't the entirety of the puzzle.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, which you brought out Sunday, I thought, and... You know, and I would say is common vernacular is like, well, Jesus is the way for me.
Yeah.
And I think hidden in there is a misunderstanding of the truth claims of Jesus.
Yeah.
We're going to waft into this. It's like, why is this such an important, why is it so important to believe Jesus is the way?
Yeah.
Well, I think about it this way, to kind of piggyback on what you're just saying. If Jesus isn't the way, he can't be a way.
Yeah.
Right? He's a way, so he's the way for me, but he's a way among... If he's not the way, he's not a way, because he said, I'm the way.
Yeah.
And the I am statements of Jesus... kind of capsulize what you're saying. He said, in me is the reality.
Mm-hmm.
It is not like I just am the pathway, to use your terms. I am the person in which all of the truth and reality resides.
Yeah.
And so the reason it's so important, if you study Jesus, He doesn't leave the option open.
Yeah.
He invites everybody, but he says, no one can see the Father except my, that this is the only way. And so to accurately understand, the other thing I would say is, if Jesus isn't the way, for those who I'm talking about now, about your evangelical Christians that were surveyed, the cross makes no sense.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it feels like overkill.
Yeah.
You know, you're like, well, he didn't have to do that.
Paul's claims about the resurrection are kind of silly.
Yeah.
You know, like, hey, if he didn't rise, well, you know, well, maybe Paul, but, you know, you kind of over, right? So that becomes silly. The Great Commission becomes very weak. I don't know. Optional.
Yeah.
Unnecessary, even, I would say.
Right.
You know?
Right.
It just all becomes unnecessary. And I think even the human condition becomes questionable.
Mm-hmm.
So I think everything rises or falls on this,
right?
To be honest with you. And so if he's not the way, I don't think he is a way. And if he's not, to be honest, C.S. Lewis has said, if he's not the way, he's either the way or he's crazy.
Yeah.
And if you read Jesus, and I would suggest a lot of people have not read Jesus.
Yeah.
He really doesn't give that option to us.
Yeah.
He's either Lord or he's crazy.
Yeah.
Or nefarious, one or the other. And so that, you know, that's why it becomes important, because all these dominoes kind of rest on this. And I think what you did well on Sunday, and if you've not listened to it, you need to. I think the tension comes in the way people talk about it and present it.
Hmm.
I think we've almost made inclusion trump truth and everything else. Like, it's all about inclusion. I think there's this idea that we have in our culture where if you're a person of conviction, you probably are angry and arrogant.
Yeah.
Because you hold your convictions with, I believe it. Bible says that, and you know, and it's like, and those people who, and the truth is, I think I can hold conviction with courage and kindness and compassion. And I think somewhere that's where the tension comes into play
in my
mind.
Is the because what's funny is when the most confident people in something are those that have a true, convicted, gracious. You know what I mean? Like, you're not trying to convince somebody. If I'm being boisterous and angry, and it probably is revealing either a fear or an insecurity that I have about what it is that I believe. To whereas there's almost a peace and a confidence in that conviction and the way that I share it when it's not coming from a place of insecurity. I think you're exactly right. I think the way in which it comes across for a lot of people is a wrestle. It starts to, I think, for people, just as I had some conversations this week, I think it starts to ask some other questions. You know, if Jesus is the only way, what about those people on, there's always an island somewhere. Mm-hmm. What about that island? What about that? You know, all those what ifs start to happen. And I forget if I heard this week or what it was, but we're not talking about just an abstract belief on a piece of paper. We're talking about the heart of God, mm-hmm. you know, and Paul talks about creation, talks about those almost being judged under the law, you know, understanding the extent to which your conviction is understood and all those things. In Romans, he kind of addresses some of those things in different capacities. But I think a lot of those what ifs start to come out of people's hearts and minds as they wrestle with this question a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's the personal
aspect. I think when those what ifs come, because I think they're natural, normal, is whatever.
Yeah.
I think it's because we're used to being in the seat of God.
Yeah.
So we got to have all that figured out.
Mm-hmm.
And we're not used to saying, what am I going to do with what I know? We want to sit and say, what about the people who don't know?
Yeah.
And I'm like, I don't know. I feel like that when I'm in my best spot, it's when I switch seats with God, you know? And it's like, I trust a holy, righteous, gracious, kind, always does the right thing God to deal with that.
Yeah.
So the what if I can release, and live in the what is he asking me to do? To believe what I know, to trust, surrender. And then he says, I want you to get this thing to people. So the question becomes, what am I doing with what I know he's asked me to do? The person who's living on the island that never knows this, it's like, I'm not sitting in that seat.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know. You know, I trust a good, holy, righteous God who always does the right thing. Yeah. I trust him.
Yeah.
He's sitting in that seat.
Yeah.
And that's where I feel like, if I sit in the wrong seat, I get all, I use the word collywonkered, but all crooked and upside
down. We'll bleep that out.
Yeah, whatever the Ohio word for that is, I guess. But I get all messed up, I think. Yeah.
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 I just this past week was in Colorado with my friend, and he goes jeeping, which is a nightmare. It's like, I woke up sore. He's on these trails. He deflates his tires a little bit. He's on these trails. There's drop-offs. I'm like, dude, you can't go up that. You shouldn't go. What are you doing? The whole time, I'm like, you know, and you start off, you're so tense. And you're like, you're bouncing around. And I want to grab the steering wheel because when I drive, I know what my car can and can't do, what you're supposed to. But there's a whole different experience. And so to what you said, like, I need to switch seats with God. It's another dimension of what faith is. You know what I mean? It's like you have a position and a control and an understanding that I don't have. And that's not just dismissive, it's just being real about what I'm called to do and hold, and what is me trusting the heart of God by faith, which is what we're called to do in every area of our life.
And I've ridden with you, and I want your friend driving while jeeping. Well, that's a different conversation. That's a different podcast. That was hurtful
but also true. I've never claimed, nor will I ever claim to be a good driver. I've never been like, I could drive, let me do it. Yeah. You know, one of the things that I talked about Sunday, which just here, we're just doing inside baseball here. Sometimes preach a sermon, you're like, this makes so much sense to me.
Yeah.
And I was running Saturday night. I'm like, I hope this lands with people.
Oh, I thought it was great. Yeah.
I've talked to a lot of people. I said this in some of our services. I don't say the same thing in every service. I grew up listening to these bands, or, you know, you listen to different people who maybe are in the faith, or could be an author, could be whatever, and they're in the faith. And some point they walk away. You might be addressing some of this coming week. And they walk away. And a lot of times I'd hear people say, well, it's so small of a faith. I got outside of my bubble. I got outside of my hometown and I saw other things. And I realized God, you know, and it almost sounds like the faith they had was just this tiny little faith. And then they got into the real world. So, you know what I mean? And I'm always like, man, I think you had a small version, because what we're talking about Sunday is everything from John Coltrane's jazz album to the standard Christian and the globe to all these things are so much more vast and beautiful and dense. Well, I mean, in our services Sunday, we had a couple of our, they're not our missionaries, but they're a pastor and his wife that we support in Mexico, and hearing how the gospel's impacting very real situations in their life. You're like, man, this thing is really big and broad and beautiful and is compelling. What for you, this may be a simple question. I think this conversation makes more sense when our hearts are more and more compelled by Christ. Mm-hmm. Some people's hearts are compelled to Thanksgiving food, compelled by musicals, compelled by board games. And so they're like, I got to tell you about Aiden. I had a lot of people tell me about musicals that I should see on Sunday. And I'm like, no. What for you are the pieces of the gospel that are like, this is just compelling. Mm-hmm. I have my own questions. I have my own doubts, own struggles, own what ifs, but I'm so compelled to the person of Jesus because of this, that it's part of this whole smoothie cocktail of him being the only way. What would you say?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so I'll answer that. NASCAR is something I don't care about that a lot of people care about, and that will get us a couple emails, but I don't care about that. And people want to tell me about their drivers and things like that. But, yeah, I think, you know, when I think about the – because I think that's a good point. I think about the historicity of Jesus. Mm-hmm. So I'm just thinking through almost layers or bullet points. Like, I read somewhere, and I wish I could remember where or who. I don't know who to give credit to or whatever. But they said there's more historical evidence for the existence and life of Jesus than Plato, you know. Mm. And there's not people going around questioning Plato, you know. Like, was he a real person? You know. And so we know Jesus was the historicity, and then the historical impact of Jesus. Jesus didn't go far. Talked about in your little town, and he didn't travel far, and yet the impact of Jesus has traveled far. if we look at hospitals and orphanages, I mean, mm-hmm. you can trace this thing through the treatment of women in cultures and things like that, the impact of the teachings of Jesus.
Yeah.
And then I think of the compelling life of Jesus. So when we talk about him being the way, I certainly think part of what we're talking about, he's the way of salvation, Acts 4:12.
Yeah, absolutely.
He is the way. There is no other way to be saved.
Yep.
But he's also, there's no other way to live as somebody who's saved.
Yeah.
And so you talk about, we live in a culture where if you're going to be convicted, you're going to be bullish about it. I don't know that you could get more convicted than Son of God, I am he, and yeah. more compassionate and compelling, to use the word you're, where little children are sitting on his lap, yeah. where women caught in adultery are safe in his presence, where people who are tormented are freed, where outsiders are invited to be insiders. Like,
yeah.
And yet he is the one who said, I am the way. I am the way. There's no other way. So the life of Jesus is, for me, unbelievably compelling, because I think it is something that is upside down in our world. And then, you know, I mean, there's a lot of things that are compelling to me about it. I think the prophecies of Jesus. I was reading this. I wish these guys' names quicker came to my mind, but he was a mathematician, and he was saying the probability of Jesus fulfilling the 48 messianic prophecies and is like 10 to the 157th power. You know, it's like all these zeros or whatever. Yep. And when you read it, like, Jesus fulfills not just those messianic prophecies, but like, I don't know, like 300 different Old Testament prophecies.
Yeah.
And you're like, well, that's pretty compelling. That, like, we can dismiss that, but it's like, okay, he was a real person.
Yeah.
He really did live in an upside down way. It's like, that's pretty compelling. He was all, he checked all the boxes. He fulfilled the prophecies. And then he really did die.
Yeah.
And then you talk about the resurrection. And of all the things that compel me about Jesus, I think that's the most compelling. And I think that's what Paul was talking about. That I think I'm correct in saying this. He's the only spiritual leader who predicted his death, burial, and resurrection, and then made good on the prediction. And then his followers died saying that happened.
Yeah.
I don't know about you, but I can believe something very strongly, but if I know it's a lie, there's a certain threshold that you're going to get me to, and I'm like, okay, I give. Uncle.
Yeah.
And these guys are giving their life so that the seed of that message could go forward, because that's true. I think, wow, that is compelling. And then I look at the preservation and maybe the multiplication of the movement of Jesus, and that's compelling to me.
Yeah.
Because it's not just the 30 plus years of life he lived are compelling to me, but it's the maybe the groundswell of echo after his life and the movement of that leads to such that I can stand on the stage Sunday with a guy who speaks a different language, lives in a whole different part of the world, and the same life has so transformed both of our lives.
Yeah.
You see what I'm saying? So those things come to my mind. It's like when you really begin to lean in and I, you know, Aiden, I really just believe that if people, when I have people that question, I had a guy come to our church in Indiana. He was an atheist. He's like, I don't believe this stuff. I'm like, well, what stuff? You know, Christian stuff and that and the other thing. And I'm like, okay. I said, he said, but I'm intrigued to learn stuff. I'm like, well, let's look at the life of Jesus. And we just started reading the Gospels together. Mm-hmm. I believe, and then once that happened, I mean, the guy ended up giving his life to Christ. I'm not saying it happens every time. But I think a lot of people reject what they don't know sometimes.
Sure.
It's like, let's just lean in
and
look at his life. And so I think there's a lot of compelling things about the life of Jesus that for me are overwhelming. And I also think they're challenging.
Yeah.
I think he lived upside down. So he was the way. He is the way. And sometimes I don't follow the way.
Yeah.
You know, I kind of want to do this thing my way. And he said, no, I'm the way to eternal life. Okay. I'm also the way to this abundant life.
Yeah.
Well, that feels goofy to forgive my enemies. That feels funny to love them and pray for them. Like, I don't like that. You know? And he's like, no, follow me. I'm the way to your salvation, and I'm the way to freedom from a jail that you don't even know you're going to live in with bitterness. And those things are compelling to me, because if you've ever followed him, you're like, he kind of knew what he was talking about.
Yeah, yeah.
He kind of knew what he was talking about. And not kind of. He did know what he was talking about, yeah. But, yeah, so those things come to my mind when you ask that question. I'm like, I think to lean in and study the life and unwrap the layers of the historicity of it, the prophetic fulfillment, the impact on culture and society, the mm-hmm. upside down way of living, and then the cross, the burial, and resurrection of Jesus. Yeah. And then look at the movement of Jesus to this day. It's like, those things come to my mind.
I think it's important for us to, I mean, for you listening, to consider that. Just what are the pieces? It can be easy to subconsciously drift into a belief system. Mm-hmm. And a belief system doesn't care about you. A belief system doesn't care about other people. A belief system, but the person of Christ is different than just a belief system. And so I think it's important for us to wrestle with why am I compelled to Jesus? I wrote mm-hmm. top piece paper once, just that whatever is a song title, Whatever Keeps You Going mm-hmm. is a song by this artist. And it just, because there's those times you're going to talk about it this week that we have doubts or that we wrestle. And it's important to not just keep a belief system in front of us, but keep the person of Christ mm-hmm. in front of us. Mm-hmm. There's the idea of marriage is beautiful, mm-hmm. but it's nothing compared to my relationship with Sarah, you know? And so, I just think it's important for us to, on our own hearts, consider the why am I drawn to the person of Christ? Why do I love Jesus? Why do I get up and give myself to him every day? Mm-hmm. And for us to wrestle with that. Yeah.
And I think maybe the most compelling thing, and you would agree with this in light of your just, is I believe with all my heart that Jesus loves me.
Yeah.
I believe that with all of my heart, and that he was God in the flesh, and that God loves me, and that Jesus loves me. And so why in the world, I think a lot of Christians will get up and do the right things for wrong reasons.
Yeah.
But when I realize that I'm getting up and I'm living and following somebody who loves me more than I'll ever love him, you know, I'm never going to match that. And I let that begin to sink in. And Paul said this, the love of Christ compels me.
Yeah.
He said it just literally constrains me to the point where it moves me. And that becomes the motivation, the inspiration, the thing that moves you. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, so if these conversations are helpful, always feel free to reach out to any of us on the team, any leaders of the church. We love having these conversations with you.
And if you like Thanksgiving food, reach out to him.
Another one of the things that I don't care much for is football.
Ooh.
Ooh.
Next podcast, ooh. Tune in.